Okay, so we were talking about the hustle, the entrepreneurship that you took during high school to save money. So besides you selling chips and working with some of your teachers, did you have any other resources to prepare you of to get you ready for college?
In Garfield, we had Gear Up. They would take us to field trips to colleges. I remember they took us to San Francisco to actually meet the campuses there. I believe we went to Berkeley, but it was all the colleges in the Bay Area. Well, some of them. So I had them, and then one of their college counselors came to Torres, and he was the main person that was guiding me. But that was it.
But in terms like resources specifically for undocumented students, there were any available?
No. I remember there was a lot of undocumented friends that I had in that school in different academies that had the same questions that I had. So we are just trying to figure it out together.
Okay, so at this point, did you form like a support group, like an informal support group or something along those lines?
No.
Yeah. So it was just getting together and trying to figure it out the questions that you all had.
Not really. I think because we were all going to different campuses, I just remember the specific friend that was also documented, and he was going to Pomona, that he had some questions on how to do, I think, FAFSA or the DREAM Act or certain, I think, or even AB 540, that I could not give him any like responses to, because Castro Ley was asking for something else, I believe. Or nothing compared to what they were asking him, because each campus was different from my understanding. But it was never like we got together to form a group or to like help each other. I think we were in the mindset of we're just trying to figure it out on our own.
Do you have any ideas now that you think about it? Why was that?
Why we were just like in
Like
a
kinda more independent?
I think because both of us were first generation, so like we never had anyone to help us, guide us, look up to, and first generation's first ones going to college, so we were really just trying to figure it out. I didn't have any answers for him. I was not experienced. I didn't have the right resources, and we weren't aware of any groups or folks that could help us or that could be there. Or even our college counselors didn't quite understood what we had to fill out or how to fill it out, because it seemed that they hadn't had that much experience working with undocumented students, or it wasn't a common thing for, I'm not sure. Like it was a common like population that they would work with.
Right, maybe didn't come across many undocumented students who were really serious about pursuing college. It might be one of those. Okay, thank you for sharing that. So besides, let me see. So who helped you apply for the schools that you were applying to? Because you applied to certain UCs and certain Cal States, right?
Yes.
And at this
Yeah.
time, and if I'm not wrong, you need to pay for the fees, right, for the applications.
Yes. Are you referring to like who helped me as far as filling them out or who helped me pay for them.
Both. How did you pay and who helped you? Because there are certain questions that only us get asked, right? And we need to bypass the social security number stuff and all that stuff.
Yeah, so with the applications, the forms, electronic forms, my college counselor helped me. And then with the payment, I had saved up some money and I was willing to pay, but I'm not sure who spread the word. And I got some scholarships from, one was from like a tax guy. I'm not sure. I think one of my college counselor actually paid for one because they didn't want me to pay. A lot of people came through. I like to call like angels because I was ready to pay, but they told me you don't have to because someone gave me a scholarship or funds to cover you for those applications.
Oh, that was really nice that, they help you out there. Did you remember what other schools you got into? I got you to Berkeley, UC Riverside, and obviously Cal State LA. Do you remember the other schools?
Okay, Kapali Pomona.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember we went to visit Kapali Pomona. I went with my parents. They're asking all these documents because I didn't want to go to Castle LA because they compared it to ELAC. They compared it to ELAC. I think, I'm not sure if they still do it. But I guess, I don't know. I was just thinking about like getting away from home, but not too far. So I remember going to Cal Poly Pomona and just asking about money. And we thought it was too much and then it was too far. So it came down to Casa Dole.
So you pick Castellay based on location for the most part.
Yes, because it was close to home. I could easily commute. I could have a home to come back to and a place where I can eat.
Right. So it was more convenient, right?
Yeah, because if not, then
Okay.
I would have to think about housing or renting. Let's say if I went to Pomona, renting there.
Right.
Extra things.
So, you graduated from high school in 2012.
Yes.
So at this time, the Dream Act passed in October 2011, but it was not implemented until 2012. So, the first year that you went to college, were you awarded the Dream Act?
I think the financial aid at Castle LA was still trying to figure it out. Since you mentioned it was being implemented in 2012, they didn't implement it. They were able to figure things out until 2013. And that's when I believe I was awarded then. Because I remember I had to cover my full year, and that's the money that came in from the CHIPS to cover the first year and then to work. Well, the first quarter, and then I had to pay the other quarter. So that's why I think it came in handy that I was working, because I was paying, and I don't know. I think my mom paints it very well, and she gets really sad about how she would just see me like collect all this money and save all this money, and like in a few months, say like it would just be gone, and then to start again and save up, and then it would just be gone. And we saw that for like the first year, until the Dream Act kicked in. But even when I got the Dream Act, or I was awarded the Dream Act, I didn't get the full amount. I would still have to pay, I forgot how much, maybe like 800, around that, around there. But I was just like, okay, this is better than having to pay the full amount in my head. And I'm like, everything else that I'll just keep saving, I'll keep doing the same routine, because in my head, I had an understanding that money was a weakness, in the sense that I didn't have it, that I had to make that my strength. So my mindset was just on like, I have to save for any emergency. And because I was granted the Dream Act, it doesn't mean that I don't have to save. I have to save for books. I have to save for any emergency, for anything.
Right, so the first year you kept working in Mercadito, and then even after work, after getting the Dream Act.
Yes, I started working there when I started college, and I continued working there for about the first 2 years in college, I believe, if I remember correctly, until I got hired for as a peer mentor advisor for the Dreamers Resource Center.
Okay, we'll get to that in a bit. So,
Yeah, that tags in DACA.
yes, that kicks in when DACA, it's implemented, right? Maybe thinking about before DACA, what were some of the obstacles that you overcame growing up? I mean, this is obviously when you get here, as you transition to middle school, to elementary, to middle school, to high school, can you recall any obstacles about, education-wise, family dynamics, or any obstacles?
I don't have any other ones besides the ones that I mentioned. Those were some of the hardest obstacles I had to overcome.
Nice. Okay. So you are the second to oldest. Did your older sister did not pursue college?
Correct. She
Okay.
didn't go to college.
So you're the first one to go through the whole thing then,
Correct.
right?
Yes.
Okay. That's a role model, right, for the youngest ones.
Yeah, it's paving, what is it called? Paving the way.
Yes,
That's hard.
it is because you need to figure it out on your own.
No one to
Yes.
guide you, no one to support you. In my case, my mom's like, no. So I had to figure it all out on my own. And then the next generation was able to benefit from it, which is
Yeah.
something to be proud of.
I think so. I think so because So right now it kind of happens the same way because some of us have DACA, right? Some don't have DACA, but we do have the Dream Act. But then you don't have a work permit, people cannot get discouraged to go to college. So it's like the vicious cycle of never ending. Like, is it ever gonna
Yes.
end?
No, they're always just trying to attack us, and people are always fearful, and it makes sense, it's valid, and but it's just not, it seems like it's, yeah, they don't want us to be happy.
Right, to have a fair shot, I think. I agree with that. Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that. So it's comes to 2012, you're working and going to school. So what was it like your first year working, managing your work schedule and then your school? How did that work?
It was, if I remember correctly, it went well, because I went to school on the weekdays and I worked on the weekends. So I would work, was it Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, or Saturday and Sunday? So it was easy for me to like just alternate it. They were long hours on Saturday and Sunday because they were full time, like a work schedule. But it was, I think it was hours that I needed to do to save up and be able to pay for my education.
Right. So, and during the first year, in Acosta, did you meet any anyone there? Any undocumented students?
It all seems like a blur. I was like, I forgot. I'm kidding. I don't. I don't remember exactly the first year, but I do remember sooner than later I came across a friend that wasn't a very close friend, that I saw at Garfield and came across her and just started talking to her, and I told her that I was undocumented, and she said that she was undocumented too. And she, I think it was, she introduced me to Frank Cornelio, who was an AB 540 advisor. And Frank took us to introduce us to Surge. And that's how we became involved. But I don't know if it was specifically the first year. I would have to like really check photos and maybe some of the years and really think back, because I don't remember if it was the first year, but I know it was sooner than later.
Okay. Do you remember who did you meet as Surge, like the first time, or the people who you remember from Surge?
The first meeting.
The first meeting.
Yeah, Frank took us. We sat there. We came. We met Miguel, Joanna. Because there were so many Joannas. There's a Joanna. She was a. I think at the time she was the vice president of Surge. And the president, I think. Okay, I don't remember the president. What's his name? Luis? Luis, forgot his last name. And Steve, because they were all like a clique. I think I met Joanna at that time too. The other Joanna, Hinojosa. Who else did I meet? I think those are like the folks that I remember that I met in the first meeting.
And what was your first impression, when you met them, when you came to their first meeting?
My first impression was that they were very friendly, very welcoming. It made me feel like I wanted to be part of the group. Very high energy. I felt like family. I felt like I belonged there.
And before meeting them, did you ever feel as welcome in like maybe high school or even across the ages before meeting them? Did you feel as welcome before?
No. I just felt neutral. I felt like I'm entering college and that's it. Nothing like, hi, welcome, blah, blah. We're welcoming you with open arms. It didn't feel like that.
And what make you feel more welcome when you met them?
Just knowing that it was, I remember when Frank told us it was the specific undocumented student support group, that everyone in that room was either undocumented or an undocu ally. I felt safe and I felt seen. I felt heard. I felt welcomed.
Did you remember any of the activities that were happening that day?
They would always do these icebreakers that I really enjoyed. What's something embarrassing that has happened to you. And people would share. And it was really funny. We would always laugh at the icebreaker and our people's stories. And that really, for me, that really did it because it helped me see another side of like everyone's personality and how they were. And just off the bat, seemed like they were fun people to be around.
And how did the first meeting look like? I mean, were there a lot of students? Were there more allies? Were there any stuff? I mean, I guess it's hard to tell. Maybe they just look older. I don't know. Do you remember how did that room look like in terms of the people there?
I couldn't distinguish specifically the who were undocumented, who were the allies, until you actually got to know the person. I just remember, I'm not sure it was the first meeting, but I just remember when they would have like potlucks or food, or they always had food, I believe. So people would come to their meetings. No, I don't think you could tell. Like, I don't think you could tell like who was who. People were just, it just seemed like people were just like normal human beings, like normal, like we forgot we were undocumented. You know what I mean? Like it just felt like we just felt like one. We just felt like a family. It's like undocumented who?
And what made it feel like a family? Was it the sharing their stories and meeting them more on a more personal level, or just the vibe?
What made it more like a family was when they would share their stories, when they would talk about like how passionate they were about the movement, what we had to do, how fired up and angry people were about certain things. And how they worked as a group. One that first year is like how they managed to lead us for either a retreat or activities or to tackle a political event.
So, I think we can stop here.